This is True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup.
That is my addiction, buying shoes like maniac, especially at Manolo Blahnik. I should have maybe 2,000 pair.
No, where do you keep them?
Everywhere, and I pamper them better than my children.
In this series of podcasts for Harrods, I'm talking to people at the top of the creative industries about their work and their relationship with luxury. Today, I'm here with the makeup artist Terry de Gunsberg. She invented what is possibly the most famous makeup product in the world, Touche Éclat for Yves Saint Laurent, and then founded her own line of luxury beauty products by Terry. She has, quite literally, changed the face of women across the globe. Today, for the first time in a long time, I was so worried about what I was going to wear and what I was going to do with my makeup, because I thought, she's so chic. She's so French. She talks about style and luxury and, you know, this is the essential ingredients. And I thought, I'm going to get it all completely wrong. So I want to know how judgmental you are when you look around, because you are clearly incredibly naturally stylish.
Thank you very much, but I have an opinion, but I never judging. Sometime I'm judging when it's over everything, beyond, you know, the limits of makeup, of fashion, of accessories. And more, my philosophy, it's definitely less is more, and to cultivate your own style. So believe me, I wish I could have your skin, your haircut, you're everything.
I'm blushing now, terribly. You've been described many times and oft repeated as the Steve Jobs of cosmetics. I wondered if we could start very simply by just trying to define what your Terry idea of perfect makeup is.
You will be surprised, but it's imperfection. To try to cover, to try to over-erase what is in nature, I think it's the wrong way, because life is not filters. I like wrinkles. I like flows sometimes on the face.
It's freckles.
Okay. Freckles, lines, some red. You know, it's give. Let's turn it to blush. Let's turn freckles to, let's say, a style of something and exaggerate them. You know, I worked with Yves Saint Laurent for 15 years, and before of that, with the most extraordinary people who made fashion history. Maria and Rosie Carita, all those phenomenal photographers.
You work with David Bailey. And
David Bailey, Avedon, even Cecil Beaton. We had like a big week of shooting for Vogue with all these aristocratic ladies. So it was absolutely amazing. Of course, we all wanted to be, I don't know, slim as, let's say, I don't know who, but we all have role models, but dictature, I don't like to dictate. This season, you must do this. This year, you must wear five different foundation to feel perfect. It's not my style. I like to make you feel confident with what you have to make it better, just to feel better.
But that makes you quite subversive in the fashion world today, doesn't it, in the world of fashion and cosmetics and so on, because everything is about tomorrow you can't be wearing that, next month you must move on. It feels in some ways, you know, I'm in my 50s, like it's become more conservative than it was in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, when there seemed to be an awful lot more freedom of expression, individuality.
You're so right. Everybody with all those social medias and that want to be like the Kardashian, like the royalties, you know, on the last night at BAFTA. Why not, if it's a role model? I think today people self-celebrating themselves as the new royalty. For example, Kim Kardashian, it's definitely more famous than any writer, actress, or anyone. You just have to see on her followers on Instagram, and that I definitely feel sometimes myself as a dinosaur. You know, it's so strange for me to be surprised by all of that when I've been the first one to do the makeup for Linda Evangelista for her first shooting. She just arrived from Canada.
No.
And it was her first shooting doing makeup for Naomi Campbell for Yves Saint Laurent. She was 14. Doing the makeup for Kate Moss when she advertised Opium for Yves Saint Laurent. But that was art. It wasn't business. But you know, I have to confess something. I have never been in the trend. You know, my role, it's not to follow the trend. It's not to follow the woman needs. It's to anticipate women's need.
Which is exactly what happened to you, but almost in a frustrating way, isn't it, with Touche Éclat, which you invented, which you conceived and created when you were working with Yves Saint Laurent. Mm-hmm. And it took quite a long time, didn't it, for people to understand that this was an amazing thing. So will you tell me first why it was an amazing thing and how it felt that the world wasn't ready for it?
It was like a total revolution because it was an item that never exists in the cosmetic industry. It wasn't a foundation. It wasn't an highlighter. It wasn't a concealer. It wasn't a moisturizer. It wasn't only a tool, but all together just in a dispenser.
Like an EpiPen almost.
A pen. And why it worked, because I anticipated all the needs of each woman to make it simple and effortless and mistake-proof. All that was anticipating as if I was a beauty engineer.
And of course,
that's why they called me the Steve Jobs of cosmetics.
And of course, there's been a huge revolution also in terms of, you know, women's working lives, or women's lives in general in the last 30 years or so. And so part of your role really in creating cosmetics has been to create cosmetics for almost like a species that didn't exist before. You know, these were, you know, women who need to make up and to look great, but also to be on the move, to be able to do 17 different things in a day, you know, that couldn't use makeup, that sat on a dressing table, would take an hour to apply.
I'm part of this gang. I'm part of this generation. I had 2 children at that time. I had to work to bring them, to drop them to school with an old car because I had no money with an old car. So the car never, you know, started. So I had to do all of that, to think of and to arrive pampered as if I spent an hour and a half to see Monsieur Saint Laurent at Avenue Marceau with my lipstick, with my fresh skin, with all of that. I know what is women life all around the world, except if you have 5 hours to spend to track your wrinkle, your thing, you know, to do your makeup. You know, I always devoted my time and my creativity to do colors, texture, tools, products for normal women and not for backstage. I'm very proud to say my role is to work for normal women and to bring them an extra feeling of being totally exceptional in exactly 3 minutes. Who has more than 3 minutes to clean the face at night or at morning? Who has more than 5 minutes, and it's a lot of time, to do a complete makeup? Not me.
So from the very beginning, you were a curious mixture of science and artistic impulses, you know, and you come from a family of scientists and you nearly became a scientist. And then you sort of diverted and decided to go to art college. And while you were waiting to go to art college, you took a course at Maria Carita and your life changed. I wondered, first of all, what made you take that diversion? What made you realize that you weren't set to follow in the family footsteps?
Because it was a great way to say to my father, I won't be the person you want me to become like. You see what I mean?
You were rebelling.
It was my way to rebel to my rebel, you said?
Yes.
That, to my father. I always loved science. my husband is a scientist, my father is a scientist. Have to check with Freud, what does it mean?
I was just thinking that.
But I love science, but I discovered that I would never be a good doctor. But I was more artistry, I'm super artistry because I have dreams and I can put images on my dreams and on my ideas, but I'm very, very concrete. Comment on dit concrete? Down to earth.
Yeah.
I'm extremely down to earth.
So there you were doing this very short, I think it was a 6-week course at Maria Carita.
So it was like when I said to my father, I'm not going to continue my medical studies and university. He said, okay, no problem, but you have to do something or you have to work but it's better for you if you learn something. Learn something. It's all learn to do bouquet, cooking, whatever you want. And I said, okay, you know what? I adore makeup. I adore texture. I always loved cosmetics.
Really?
Not to wear makeup, but I always loved cosmetic. My father used to teach us how to create cream when we were a child, Aliza and myself. That's why we're in cosmetics. How to do cologne, how to do... We used to spend the summer in south of France near Saint-Tropez in Ramatuelle and to bring all those essential oils, lavender, things like that. And on Sunday afternoon, instead of baking things, we were doing creams, fragrances and things like that.
And so your father used to do that with you and your sister.
Yeah, he adores cosmetics. So you see, I stopped my medical studies to become a cosmetic guru. So definitely I need to see Freud.
So you did this in a very well-established course in Paris, and in the midst of it, Maria Carita gave you the responsibility to go along to a photo shoot and to do the makeup for the models. I mean, you'd probably been doing the course maybe 4 weeks at that point.
4 weeks, yeah. I said, okay, it's an experience. Let's do that. I told her, but I don't know how to do it. And she told me, and she gave me the best advice ever. Never say that you don't know how to do things before you experience doing them. And that each single fear I have in my life, I don't know how to do it. Just doing it. And sometimes I'm wrong. Many times it's right.
So what are the skills that you employed in taking your abilities as a makeup artist? You know, you worked with some of the greatest photographers of the time. And, as you've told me, you worked with some amazing supermodels of the day. But how did you take that and turn it into something that really became a cross between art and science, which is the creation of wonderful cosmetics?
I had something. Definitely, I knew how to apply things because I had a sense of balance. I always liked to emphasize glow and luminosity. I knew instantly how to create beautiful canvas without make it fake and without make it too much and without how to draw perfect lips, how to make one by one lashes, because that was the only thing I knew how to apply makeup for myself, brows and perfect red lipstick. And I did on someone else what I used to do on myself, but perfectly. I can draw. I can do things. I'm not an artist. I'm a creative person. I know how to manipulate pens, pencils, brushes, colors on a three-dimension canvas. It was instinctive. Instinctive. So I did that. Perfect canvas with a lot of luminosity, red bold lipstick, lashes, eyebrows. And I remember I worked with Guy Bourdin and they said, oh my God, it's so refreshing. At those times, it was early in the 70s, the makeup was very heavy, very fake, very all of that. And I came with something completely different. They said, oh, it's so refreshing. She has a real style. I was very surprised by that. And then I started to work with very famous photographer like Keith Herman, Sarah Moon, all those. And it was easy. The industry wasn't the same as today. You have agent as they are football player, you know, all the makeup artists, and they never touch a nail. It's all about money. It's all about this. It wasn't that. We were all devoted to create an image. Photographer, hairdresser, stylist, makeup artist, we were all the same, on the same level.
So it was much more collaborative.
Definitely. Money was nothing. There was no limit of money for creation. If suddenly Avedon or Guy Bourdin wanted, I don't know, a fridge at midnight on the set, we could do, you know, it was with no limit. I remember after a shooting, we went to the Maison du Caviar for dinner or to the best French restaurant. It was great. We were like a team to create the perfect image.
And when did you realize that this was something that you could expand on, that it wasn't just about having a brilliant time in the 70s and the 80s and being part of what must have been a very exciting moment in the world of fashion? It was something that actually you could make into a business, that it could be something that was beyond, you know, creating beautiful images.
I would disappoint you, but I never thought that way. In 85, when I was hired by Yves Saint Laurent, it came by chance. All my life, I've met great people and I had opportunities and I took the opportunities and I just made things very honestly, humbly, and with all the strength I can put in what I was doing. You see what I mean? I never had a plan de carrière. I don't know how you say plan de carrière. I never planned to have a career.
Oh, yeah, you never had a career plan.
I never even anticipate to have my own line. I came to Pierre Berger and Yves Saint Laurent with this, I think, brilliant idea to create haute couleur department at Yves Saint Laurent as I had the haute couture. One color, one product in a beautiful case, handmade for one person with the same fitting, exactly as haute couture. Haute couture, before of making the dress for one person, is has a lot of creativity behind, you know. So that was the idea to bring to cosmetics. When I told that to Pierre Berger, he said, you know what, it's a great and brilliant idea, but you will do it for you. For yourself, because I don't think we are ready for that. And we will help you. He knew that Yves Saint Laurent will retire one day. And I started 2 or 3 years in advance, but I stayed.
And did they help you?
A lot. But they made me promise never to leave Yves Saint Laurent before he decide to leave his own house. So I stayed and I continued to create the color, the texture, the style and everything for cosmetics. And when he retired, we were three of us, Eddie Sliman, Albert Elbaz and myself, to say thank you, goodbye. And it was Tom Ford time.
I mean, you weren't just a collaborator with Yves Saint Laurent. You were really good friends.
We were close. I can't say good friends because I wasn't in his private life. But we were very close. I could understand what he wanted without any word. I used to see him not only during working time, also Monsieur Berger, Pierre Berger had his home near my home in Saint-Rémy-de-Provence. Sometimes he came for dinner at home, but I wasn't like Loulou de la Falaise and Betty Catrou from his first circle of friends. I was a little bit boring for this kind of people because I had a family, I had children, I was absolutely normal, no drug addict. No,
racy sex life or anything going on. No.
And I'm still very boring.
But you have worked incredibly hard and you've created your own makeup empire, if I might, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But I know that you've said that your idea of luxury is actually time.
Oh, definitely. Time is so important. My me time, it's much better than any big diamond. Time with my beloved people, with my family, with my grandchildren. I know it seems very, what is he saying? But it's true, you know, to be in my home in Saint-Rémy and just contemplating my roses, do my gardening, time for me, and not to be, comment on dit, disponible, available.
Always available.
You know, you have to be, when you are doing what I'm doing, you have to be always available for someone. It's energy consuming.
But is it that sense of priorities, do you think, that's made you as successful as you've been? Because it seems to me that you have very clear boundaries, you know, clear boundaries between your work life and your home life, between what you believe in and what you create, you know.
Yeah, but so my private life is definitely family with my stepchildren. We have 7 children, my husband and myself, because I had 2 boys with him, so I make me 4 children. I adore my stepdaughters. They are like, I'm not the mother, but they're like my daughters. We have 12 grandchildren together. But when you are a creative person, you never know when suddenly your mind or your soul or your feeling it catch up by an idea. I don't know, like gardening with my granddaughter in Provence. And we cutted flowers and I said, oh, it's a great palette of pale tones. Thanks to Steve Jobs, I just took a picture and sent it to my lab. And I said, I want exactly that tone of palette. I didn't know it 3 seconds before. So you never know. My mind is always in alert. You see that? And my emotional side is always in alert. And it feeds my creativity. But I never know when it would happen.
But clearly what you're saying is that you find that a lot of your inspiration comes in the times when you're not actually working.
Of course. Work for me is spend time with my wonderful team, explain them why I hate what they showed me, why they can do better, because I believe in their strength much more than and they believe in their own capacities. So that is work for me.
Tell me, when it comes to makeup, is that something? I mean, obviously, your makeup is quite expensive for a lot of people.
It's like wine.
It's like wine.
It's expensive not because we are advertising. Sorry for all the magazines. It's expensive because my makeup is elaborate. I won't say much better, but differently better than other formulas with other texture, with other, you know. If I still in the market today, 20 years after, with all this competition, with no advertising, with no big
backers,
with no, you know, it's because it has a reason. And the reason is the quality of the products. So what we're using in the products, it's very expensive. The highest amounts of the best quality of ingredients. It has a cost. You know that there is like maybe 100 different vitamin E. You can have very cheap one and very expensive one. It's like wine. All comes from grape, right or no?
So
it's the same. It's all the assemblage, all the technology behind. When we are not extracting, but we are cultivating stem cells from ruby roses, white roses, yellow roses, peach roses, to make it like a bouquet, super powerful, detoxifying, lifting, firming, hydrating, glowing, with clinical proofs. You say that? It has a cost, but I don't know how to make it. cheaper.
So what do you think makes your products unique? Is it this attention to detail on your part? Is it the fact that you only use the best thing? I mean, what makes them luxurious?
All of that.
Touch,
smell. Each smell is elaborate as a fragrance and not as a smell for a cosmetic or to compensate sometimes a bad smell of an ingredient. The quality of the ingredients, the amount of the ingredients we use, it's not that we just put a little bit of thing to say we're using that. No, we really put the maximum we can put to improve the efficiency. When we have a setting powder, like the hyaluronic acid hydra powder, it's like only one ingredient, millions of tiny sphere of hyaluronic acid that goes into your skin, and that is a very original and exclusive and secret formula. It's a unique one. It's like a skincare in a powder.
I can't decide whether you are an obsessive or a scientist or a...
obsessive.
Because your interests are very broad-ranging. You know, you're an art collector. You clearly love things that are beautiful. You have an eye for beauty. I'm trying to find where the interest in makeup still comes from, because it seems to me that you kind of transcended all of that now.
I love make people happy. I love to make people happy, and I love to invent things.
What made you move? Because you're created by Terry.
Yeah.
After you left Yves Saint Laurent. And then you've now moved into the realm of perfume. Well, I mean, I don't know why I'm even asking you why, because it seems to me like it's the most natural progression in the world, because what you've done is you've just gone back to what you were doing as a child with your father in the garden in Provence, no? So you're just playing again.
Absolutely. And I always loved fragrance, and perfumes were always in my DNA. That was something that I always wanted to access. But because I was a makeup artist, nobody gave me the credibility of creating fragrances. So each time I wanted to launch a fragrance, I said, no, you're a makeup artist. It's going to be a perfume of a makeup artist. It never works. You know, because I am the only one in my company who say, okay, let's do it. At the end, I will lose money and that's it. And I'm not.
So what do you put your success down to? Do you think it's tenacity? You
know, definitely.
Yeah.
You know how my husband nicknamed me? I have a nickname. He called me Ingu.
Ingu?
Every day he called me Ingu.
It's not an Inuit name or anything,
Ingu
is it?
Ingu is I never give up. I'm a super focused person, but not for a long time. So it has to be done very quickly.
But that's quite an unusual skill for a woman and a mother.
I'm very lazy.
Because normally, I think women are very easily distracted. It's probably the one thing that I would say that, you know, is true generally. And yet it doesn't seem to be true of you.
No, I'm determined because, first, I never give up. Second, it makes me feel very desperate when I'm not able to express things I don't know I have in my emotional, I don't know.
Makeup, your emotional.
So I have to do them. I have to do.
We're here to talk about luxury, and I know that you have brought along one of your perfumes that you consider to be a luxurious scent. What makes a luxurious scent?
First, the ingredients, natural ingredients. Ingredients very rare, like iris butter, like pure leather, flowers.
Did you say pure leather?
Pure essence of leather, like leathery scents. Clean and proper notes that end the assemblage. It's like a beautiful music. Luxury in fragrance, it's the ingredients and the amount of the ingredients. And that is luxury. You know when it's luxury for fragrance? When the formula costs more than the bottle.
Does your father now take credit for your entire career? Because really,
never.
In the garden.
Never.
But we're in the garden in Provence as a child. Really, he inspired these passions in you.
He inspired, but my father is a great person. You know, he like put the seed in the earth and let us become the tree we became. When I was very famous, sorry to be a little bit pretentious, but I was very famous, you know, with my name in the magazine, Terry for Yves Saint Laurent, or Yves Saint Laurent by Terry. And he told me, you know what? You are very famous, but one day you will be like obsolete in an organization. One day they will decide someone younger, with more talent, with more vibrancy, will be better for the brand than you. So you have to capitalize on your name. And I said, how can you say that to me? It's so offensive. It's so, it's, I work so hard and I'm, and he said, you have to believe in your name and use only your first name, because like that, if you change husband, you don't have to pay royalties.
Your father was obviously a very wise man indeed.
Definitely.
If you had to choose the one luxury that you elevate above all others, the thing that matters to you most.
I'm a little bit addict with a small purse in croc from Prada. So every year I treat myself with a new color.
And what do you do with the old ones?
I keep them, of course. I keep them. You know, I live like that, my dear. I have a huge big bag, not always an Hermès, but sometimes Hermès. I'm a spoiled girl. And then for lunch or for going to join someone for dinner, I look like a trophy wife with my Prada croc, you know, and I can join my husband or anyone like that. And they think I just spent the day to get ready for the event.
So basically you are your luxury is this small Prada purse in what skin? In crocodile skin.
Yeah.
Different colors so that you can pull it out of your handbag at the end of the day and become a trophy wife.
Yeah, and become a trophy wife. And in my I have, you see, my only makeup that I'm wearing. Ooh, this?
It's in a very nice silver case, platinum.
And
she's probably going to say.
I have my lipstick usually, and
what do you what makeup do you carry with you?
I carry my own makeup sometimes from competition to see if I'm still on. But I have what I have.
So we're opening the Terry makeup bag now,
I
which is a black padded, like slightly like a puffer jacket.
Yeah. I had it, I don't know, I received it in the plane, I'm, you know.
Taken from the aeroplane.
Yeah.
Bag.
So I have, you see, all the lab samples.
Oh, yeah. They've all got stickers on them. All the makeup that's coming out of it's got stickers on it.
My hand cream.
I love hand cream.
My hand and my lipstick that I adore, you see, my new velvet lip expert in matte.
And what was the idea of having all the windows in that in the lipstick?
My store in Galerie Viroda, it's a very old gallery from the 19th century that we have arcades like that. It's our Burlington arcade store, a gallery.
And you've replicated it for your
Absolutely.
Lipstick packaging.
Yes.
Brilliant. Well, so I think you and I could spend hours going through that little bag there. Just but if I let you loose in Harrods, where would you go?
To the fifth floor, to the shoe heaven. And that is my addiction, buying shoes like a maniac, especially at Manolo Blahnik. I should have maybe 2,000 pair.
No, where do you keep them?
Everywhere. And I pamper them better than my children. So I have to do it.
You are an extraordinary woman. We're very grateful that you came today to talk to us about luxury and about your favorite luxury item and everything else. Thank you, Terry.
Merci, merci, merci.
Merci beaucoup.
That is my luxury to be here. Thank you.
This has been True Tales of Luxury, recorded in Harrods in London with me, Mariella Frostrup, and my guest, Terry de Gunsberg. Goodbye.